Okay, welcome back. This is ATRT2, afternoon session. The next session on the agenda is item 11, discuss implementation of WHOA's recommendations with Margie Milam, Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives, and Chris Gift, Vice President, Online Community Services. We have 45 minutes with you. Michael, as chair of the work stream, if there's anything you want to say to preface or open the session, please feel free. Otherwise, we can turn it over to Chris and Margie. Anything, Michael? No? Okay. Please.
This is Chris Gift, Vice President of Online Community Services. So I'm going to go ahead and start the discussion by giving an overview of where we stand with the work in progress. But first off, thank you very much for the opportunity to allow me to speak with you today and to brief you on this status. So I am still working on three work products. The first is a WHOA's informational portal, which its purpose is to provide a number of things, and I'll go into each of these in a little bit of detail. The second is a WHOA's search or lookup, and the third is WHOA's accuracy sampling and reporting. So the WHOA's portal, it is the purpose of this, if we all agree and I think I've discussed several times, is to provide a historical record of WHOA's, to consolidate WHOA's policy documentation, to provide mechanisms to teach people how to use WHOA's, provide mechanisms for people to submit complaints as they relate to WHOA's data, and direct people to appropriate channels to become engaged in the community on WHOA's related topics. So it is a place of consolidation for all of this content across the ICANN assets for WHOA's. So where do we stand? We are working with a web developer to build and deploy a beta version of the portal by end of August, so August 30th. We are in the process of working on requirements and user stories for this portal, for the content. We will begin circulating a requirements document immediately after Durban. We are just finalizing that document right now. The communications team is briefed and has been working on a communications plan in support of the portal launch. And again, the timing is a beta by end of August, a review by this committee and other members of the community for a production launch by end of September or early to mid-October, depending on how the beta proceeds. So that is the WHOA's portal. There is a great deal of progress, and things are looking good on that. The WHOA's search. We have several paths there. ICANN development team has evaluated the work effort to create our own WHOA's search and parser. We currently estimate that to be 6 months in terms of time to do both the search and the parser. We can obviously deploy the search earlier, but the parser will add time to that for a total of 6 months approximately. To give you some idea of what the number of queries we would handle through this search, Internet currently handles roughly 85 queries per second, or 3.6 million per day. With the portal and the search capabilities provided there, we estimate we'll have to approximately more than double that to 173 queries per second, or 15 million per day, is what we are targeting for an infrastructure. I'll give you an idea when we talk about this with other commercial entities who handle WHOA's search. Their search capabilities vary between 3 to 5 million per day. So we are estimating a higher quality because this portal and search mechanism will be the most definitive. Internal estimate cost for the search capability is an internal cost of roughly $210,000 in development, $30,000 in additional work surrounding that, and about approximately $30,000 in hardware for a total of $270,000. These are budgetary estimates, if you don't mind. We're refining these as we go through some of the requirements. Development work has not begun, even though we have this initial assessments. Internal discussions continue. We continue internal discussions to resolve some issues, and I'll discuss those actually in just a moment. To be aware, we are also investigating a commercial WHOA's search solution. One has been identified and could be implemented in less than 60 days. But we have some concerns around the perception of using a commercial search option as well as the data collection methods. But it's just a point that we had looked at that as an option, although we continue to more fully investigate our own internal development. The issues we obviously need to manage on any kind of Whois search is scraping and abuse management. We need to create a membership, an account system to mitigate the abuse. We obviously need to make sure we get the data from registrars and get full access to that, and I'll touch on that in just a minute. We obviously need to provide some sort of cached records on Whois for when the Whois server is not available, and there is some discussion, ongoing discussion, about what that means and how do we cache those records, how do we present cached records so people understand that this is not that this is in fact a historical record, and how long do we cache the data for. We do not intend to build a complete database at this point, so we obviously have to purge that cache and notify people of that.
Chris, can I interrupt?
Yeah, please.
Is there any document that goes along with this, or are we supposed to wait for the transcript and read it, or should we be frantically taking notes?
Frantically taking notes.
Thank you.
sorry, that one really got me off track. Obviously, keeping track of all the Whois servers that are out there. And then, of course, lastly, parsing of non-standardized data, non-standardized formats. The major issue is obviously one we've discussed before, which is the throttling of Whois searches. And what we are doing is we will begin working with registrars on this issue, and we are preparing requirements documents and wireframes for them to better understand how we intend to perform the search, and we should be able to, with that, demonstrate that we address their issues with respect to limiting the number of queries, we're limiting screen scraping of Whois records, and addressing privacy issues as well. So I think with that, we can work with registrars to remove any kind of search limitations. So that's where we stand on Whois search. With respect to the statistical analysis, as we've talked about before, we need a number of things to perform the statistical analysis. Obviously, we need the methodology, access to Whois records. We need parsed data, so be able to parse the Whois records, some sort of address verification, a call center, and obviously a system to link some of these things together. When it comes to statistical methodology, we have not authored the methodology as of yet. We have gone through and created requirements where we need to do proportional sampling. We are also looking at oversampling for some particular areas to ensure proper country representation and ensure statistically significant sample size for some of these areas. What we are currently looking at is sampling by country, by registry, by registrar. We would weight the sample by registry size, and we will weight samples by countries, depending on the number of Whois records in the countries. On subsequent reports, we would oversample registries and registrars that had previously exhibited issues. We obviously need to create a method to randomly sample Whois records. Actually, we already have that methodology. We use that same methodology currently for an internal system on looking at Whois servers and making sure they're up. So we have that already. The fourth thing we need is address verification. We have had discussions with address verification providers. A preliminary pricing is roughly 6 cents per records that are outside of the core countries. And for them, most of the vendors, since the ones we've been talking to are in North America and Europe, so predominantly the core is North America and Europe, so 6 cents for records outside of there, and $0.007, so not even quite a penny, for records within the core countries. And we are looking, and the automation is fairly straightforward for doing address verification. The accuracy outside of the non-core countries is, I'm still waiting for accuracy on that from them, but I understand it is, there's still issues with those. But nonetheless, we can perform address verifications. To follow up, once we have an address verified, we need to initiate a phone call to the individual or the firm that has the Whois record. We have discussed this with some call centers. they can help also with the statistical analysis. They have offered that as well. Right now, from our understanding, budgetary pricing is and timeline is if we engage with them, it would approximately be 2 weeks for them to make the necessary number of calls. And we estimate the sample size to be around 3,000. That's our current working estimate to cover the sampling, as we previously discussed, plus a further 2 weeks of analysis. The initial estimate for costs for performing the statistical analysis per sampling, and this is budgetary numbers, is roughly about $175,000 per sampling. Total implementation is approximately 3 months from the day we decide to move forward with this methodology. To be frank, we continue to look for alternatives in terms of driving the cost down, because at that price point, we start to look at once per year, which I know is the current requirement. But we had hoped to provide either quarterly sampling or even more. And so we continue to look at driving the cost down through other vendors. And we have also discussed internally alternative means besides calling to verify that the owner of the WHOIS record is in fact the individual or firm. But to be frank, we haven't found a definitive means besides doing that. When you look at email, we've discussed email opportunities, we've discussed physical mail, a wide variety of means of contacting the individuals, and none of them, in our mind, have proved satisfactory to date. And that's my report.
Thank you, Chris. Questions from the review team? Alan.
Chris, the tool which is the front end to what you were just describing, I assume is the same tool that the board new GTLD program committee referred to in a recent answer to the GAC safeguards. It says a tool is almost complete to verify accuracy.
That was the same tool they were referring, but the status was inaccurate. We are not nearing completion. We are nearing completion of the requirements. So my apologies for that inaccuracy. I don't know how that slipped in there.
Thank you. It wasn't clear if it was the same tool. It was disturbing that we had never heard reference to it before, and it was almost complete.
Thank you. Other questions for Chris? Olivier.
Thank you very much, Brian. Olivier speaking. You mentioned the postal address verification that was only implemented so far in North America and Europe because your providers of such work only were based in those parts of the world, or did I misunderstand that?
No, sorry, I apologize. We're talking to global vendors, but they classify their address verification between core and non-core. And the core countries, the ones we've discussed, and their organizations like First Data and others that provide it for credit card companies, they're what they classify, and it's a pricing issue, right? And they classify their core as North America and Europe from a pricing perspective, and then non-core as a higher price because the verification can sometimes be more difficult for them in terms of data quality. So it's a pricing issue. More than anything. And we have not implemented with them. We're in discussions with three different vendors at this point.
Chris, this is Brian. Let me ask you a question, and please correct the premise if it's in any way inaccurate. At a high level, some feedback that we've gotten from the WHOIS review team members was that that review team made recommendations, that the board went off in a different direction, that we've heard also that the board did go about the business of implementing the recommendations of the WHOIS review team, but at the same time, in a strategic priority way, explored a different direction for WHOIS. That's a rough characterization of what's been presented to us. My question is, the ICANN expert working group just made a recommendation on a WHOIS replacement. Would that recommended replacement have the effect in any way of rendering null the ongoing implementation of recommendations of the review team? And if so, can you just identify those even at a high level now for us?
It would certainly replace a great deal of the work that I'm doing in the sense that most of the investment and the issues around this are are around parsing the data and validating that data. So if there is an automated means already available for us to do that, it would greatly simplify my work in terms of implementing it. So I do believe, you know, when we start to look at, for instance, some of the concepts we're investigating, and I apologize, I should have mentioned this earlier, is when we're looking at parsing the data, so when somebody does a who is search, it'll appear obviously on the web page. And once we successfully parse the data, what we'd like to do is for somebody to be able to go look at that who is record and say, you know, I don't think this who is record is accurate. Let me click on the name. I think that's wrong. I think the address is wrong. Click on that and perhaps click on one or two other things and then say submit a complaint, rather than having to take that data and re-enter it in a complaint where there's human error in terms of retyping things. So we really want to simplify some of those methods about, you know, analyzing the data. And if we can even get the cost down low enough, you can imagine a point in time where even when somebody does a who is search, it automatically returns to them, well, these three fields are suspect because it had done an address verification prior to even presenting it to them. So we've been toying around and thinking about ideas like that, but to be frank, with the new protocol, all those would be vastly easier for me. Yeah.
Thank you for that. And I don't want to get in the way of your work either, though, Michael, on the work stream, but I think it would be helpful if in some way just a mapping could be done, what the expert working group's recommendations are for who is replacement and what effect that would have on the recommendations of the review team, at a minimum would be helpful to us just in terms of mapping all of that work going forward. Michael, do you think that would be helpful to your work stream?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. I'm Michael Yakushev. The ideal solution would be to create a kind of a table where it would be clear that there were certain recommendations of the who is review team, and maybe just omitting what was in between, but putting into the right column of this table what is being done as a response, as the most, well, efficient, the most reasonable response to the recommendations of the who is review team. Just maybe skipping all intermediate discussions and all intermediate solutions that were made by the board or by someone else. And then it will be clear that it is the most technically feasible solution that is being developed by the new group or by ICANN staff, etc., etc. And of course, it would be of a great help to explain that the recommendations they were implemented in the most efficient manner, and to avoid any further discussions on whether it is just exactly corresponds to the wording of the recommendations, but maybe mostly to the spirit and to the reasonability of the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Any other questions for Chris? Okay.
We also have Steve Shang here to talk about the international aspects, since he's managing that part of the who is. If we have give him the mic for that.
Hello, my name is Steve Shang. I'm a policy staff managing this part of the project. The who is review team recommendation 12 and 13 ask staff to create a working group to define the requirements. First of all, the requirements for internationalized registration data. Second, do a study to evaluate the current solutions and the feasibility of some of these. And the third part is to produce a data model as a result of the requirement. So with respect to the requirement work, there's both a policy part and some implementation part. So with respect to the policy part, the GNSO has initiated a PDP on the translation and transliteration of the contact data. So if you look at the WHOIS data, the registration as a whole, there's, you know, domain name, their dates, their status, and part of that is the contact data. one of the key questions is whether to have translation and transliteration of that data to accommodate the global audience, and if so, where should that happen? So the GNSO is initiating a PDP on that in its June 13 meeting, and currently that PDP is in its chartering stage. We have to note, as of now, there's kind of a lack of volunteers from the community to participate in that group. So that's one of the issues we have to address. With respect to the second part, on July 8th, we send out a community call for volunteers, experts, to define the requirements and the corresponding data model. And, you know, we are also looking for, you know, community-wide experts, you know, particularly from scripts that, you know, particularly from other scripts, for example, the Arabic script, the Han script, the Devanagari script, and from those communities where they hasn't been participated as much. With respect to the survey of existing practices and the feasibility of those, that's now in the contracting phase. So that's moving along. With all of these, the GNSO PDP is in the critical path to implementing the requirements. So that's a quick update. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Olivier.
Thank you, Brian. Olivier speaking. What's your timetable for the completion of this? Sorry, I might have missed it, but...
So the timetable for the survey of existing practices, that will scheduled to complete it by January next year. The study team will do an initial report that will go out for public comment, followed by a complete report. The GNSO policy work, it's, you know, the time varies. I heard sometimes the timeline is around 2 years, 2 to 3 years. The expert working group to define requirements, that can complete roughly within, 6 months time frame. But as I said, part of that missing puzzle depends on what the GNSO PDP decides. So that's part of a policy discussion. Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Margie?
Hello, everyone. I'm Margie Bylum, and I'll provide you an update on some of the other aspects of the Who Is Review Team recommendations. One of the recommendations obviously relates to Who Is being a strategic priority for ICANN, and I think as you see in some of the responses that we've provided and the work that's been done on a number of fronts, that's clearly, you know, a very high priority for FADI and for staff. To give you an idea of the level of interest, our CEO, FADI, was involved in the RIA negotiations and got actively involved in trying to help develop some of the, consensus that of the obligations that went into the RIA. He also was behind the call for this expert working group once the board resolution came out and has been following that very intently. And the expert working group project in and of itself is going full steam ahead with a lot of resources and attention. And I'll talk a little bit about the expert report, the report that got published right before this meeting. And he also has the Vice President of Compliance, Magus, reporting directly to him. And so it continues to be a very high priority for ICANN and for staff, and I think you see it in some of the results of the work with respect to the various recommendations. With respect to, for example, the contract enhancements that I've talked about, there's been a significant amount of change with respect to the Who Is issue. The RIA that just got approved right before the Durban meeting has new obligations for registrars, some relating to verification and validation, an SLA on availability. There's standardization of formats and a specification that relates specifically to privacy and proxy providers and what rules need to apply to them. And so if you take a look at some of those documents, I think you'll see that it goes into a lot of detail and new requirements that just don't exist as of today. With respect to the privacy and proxy issue, since that was one of the recommendations, the specification for the RAA is called an interim specification, and it's in effect until January 2017 to allow the community to come up with a policy on some of the hard issues that relate to privacy and proxy. And so if you take a look at the specification, it covers basic things like service terms, having an abuse point of contact, escrow obligations, those sorts of things that we could get consensus on in the registrar negotiating team. But the harder issues of when you reveal someone's information or when you relay, communication or you unveil a who is record, that's the kind of thing that the GNSO would be looking at for policy development. And so that's going to be kicked off after the Durban meeting. And then if you look at the new GTLD registry agreements, a lot of the registry agreements have the new agreements have the WHOIS obligation, standardized formats, SLA. So if there's a significant amount of WHOIS obligations in the new GTLD agreements. And then they are also you're seeing additional obligations with respect to renewals of existing GTLD agreements. So, for example, the .org agreement for renewal has a transition clause that talks about requiring its registrars to be under the new 2013 RAA. So this is just an example of how the contracts have been enhanced per the recommendations of the review team to try to really bring up a level of obligations that relate to WHOIS. Seeing what other areas there might be interest. The single page WHOIS policy document, I think that was another area where there were some additional questions that were asked. There is a page that's posted that has a link to all of the various contracts and policies that touch upon the WHOIS issue. I need to note that it needs to be updated now that there's new obligations, and so that's another project that needs to get kicked off now that the new RAA and the new registry agreements are finalized to capture those additional obligations. And then outreach, as Chris mentioned, the communications team has come up with a plan, and the plan essentially relates to bringing the community, bringing attention to the various milestones that occur with respect to the program. So when Chris's educational portal that he talked about goes live, then that'll be that's when a communications effort will be kicked off to really bring a lot of attention to it and to try to get the portal be the central place where everybody goes to for WHOIS policy. With respect to the expert working group, as I mentioned before, that's this additional project that relates to WHOIS, and as a result of the board resolution that took place in November, there's currently, we call it the parallel path, there's two paths that staff is undergoing with respect to the WHOIS issue, one being the implementation of the WHOIS review team recommendations, and the other one trying to kick off this new effort to figure out what the replacement system is for WHOIS. And that's the work that has been just been taking a tremendous amount of time over the last few months, leading to the publication of their preliminary report that talks about what the new model should be. And I'm not going to go into those details, but given that there is a model and there's a lot of discussion of, how it can be enhanced, and the plan is to have a final report by before Buenos Aires, this brings the question that I think, Brian, you raised, is, what happens to the parallel implementation of the WHOIS review team recommendations? Currently, they're both going ahead, full steam ahead, but there may be a point where we might want to, take a look, a pause, and see does it still make sense to implement in the same way if there seems to be a consensus that the new model is the right way to go. And it was difficult to figure out whether that was even the right answer when we didn't know that there would be a model developed or what the model would look like and how the community would react to it. But at some point, it's too early now because we still don't know the answers to those questions. But once the expert working group's work is finalized and it appears that, you know, it's making progress in the GNSO's PDP that's to take place, there may be enough time to reevaluate, you know, what happens to the conclusion of those implementation decisions. And so with respect to the expert working group, as I mentioned, they plan to have their final report before Buenos Aires. The report would go to FADI and the board, and then the GNSO PDP would be kicked off at that point. So that's the next steps with respect to that project. And then with compliance, I think, you know, we've provided numerous updates with respect to compliance. Obviously, they've improved their process for handling inaccurate WHOIS records. They've shortened the time to resolution. They've completely revamped their customer interface that takes in WHOIS complaints, as well as some other types of complaints that don't have, you know, have other issues, and have tried to put up information in six UN languages and FAQs, and have increased their reporting. There's compliance metrics now that are available through MyICANN, for example, on the number of complaints that relate to WHOIS. And they're going to have to go through a similar thing as well to try to evaluate the new obligations under the 2013 RAA and the registry agreements to see how they update their procedures for these new WHOIS obligations and other obligations. So that's an additional project that they're now working on in order to make sure that their processes, you know, are in place when all these new agreements are, you know, finalized and in effect. And essentially, that's my update. I mean, there's so much information, it's probably best to take questions and to see whether I can answer some of the committee members' questions.
Sure. Thank you, Margie. Any questions for Margie? Alan.
Margie, one of the things that intrigued me in your answers that you provided to the Workstream 3, I'm not sure if the rest of the committee has seen them or not. Were they sent to everyone? Okay. Was that you envisioned the detailed rules for privacy of proxy suppliers to be done in the same PDP as the rest of the WHOIS issues? Do you really do that? Do you really envision that?
Did I say? I don't think we said that. I actually think the PDP on privacy and proxy, at least our current intention, is to have it kick off right away. Because as part of the, I don't know, Alan, if you remember, the RAA negotiations, that was kicked off by a board request. And the board request said, start the negotiations, and the GNSO is to start a PDP on, quote, the remaining issues, the issues that weren't resolved at the end of the negotiation. And one of those issues, as we've identified, is the privacy and proxy issue. So the next steps with respect to that is there will be a staff paper published identifying all the unresolved issues that, you know, relate to the RAA negotiations, and the PDP would kick off immediately. And so that's at least that's the current intent with respect to the privacy and proxy. So that it, to Alan, to answer your concern, then that issue would be separate from the WHOIS PDP.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Michael.
Michael Yakushev, thank you for your update. Am I right that it was decided not to create the single document, single policy document, but rather to create the set of links to the existing documents to simplify the access to the policy in general, but not making it as a single document?
The what staff is implementing is the action plan that was referred to in the board resolution. And if you take a look at that, we call it the action plan. It's a chart that identifies how staff intended to implement the various recommendations. And the problem is there is no single document that identifies all of the WHOIS obligations. And so in that action plan, it specified that we would provide, you know, basically links and identification for where you find the information. But it's just the complexity of the project, of the issue, that it's not like there's one place where you can find every single obligation related to WHOIS.
Any other questions? Olivier.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Chris reminded me of something as well, that because it's so difficult to understand these issues, part of where we think that issue can be resolved is through the educational portal that Chris is addressing. You know, the idea is to have better information, more simple information that the average person can, you know, understand when they, as opposed to links to contractual terms.
Olivier.
Thank you, Brian. Olivia speaking. You touched briefly on compliance improvements and improving their processes. Has a bulk submission of who is inaccuracy reports been re-enabled?
This is Chris Gift. My understanding that it is has been re-enabled and is in testing mode with, I think, three or four individuals as we speak.
Any other questions for Margie? Okay, thank you, Margie. Thanks very much. I think we're ready to segue to the next presentation. Alan, I'm going to hand it for you, to you for a few minutes.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, then the next session is Patrick Jones on SSR recommendations. Is Patrick here? Ah. What time is it? Apparently he's kicking off another meeting, and he is supposed to be here at on the half hour. Informal 8-minute break.
Okay, if we can start again, we have Patrick Jones, who will be talking about the SSR report and implementation of the recommendations, and I will, without any more ceremony, turn it over to Patrick.
Okay, so thank you for the opportunity to talk again with ATRT2. Patrick Jones from the security team. We also have Jeff Moss, our chief security officer. So we received a set of questions from the subgroup a week ago, I believe. And as a group, we're still in the process of formulating our responses. I have initial responses to many of the questions, and we can make this an informal conversational session, and then I can, after this, provide our formal responses to the questions we've received to date. I think I also have some clarifying questions that I want to ask about the questions that we've received, and hopefully that fits with what information and feedback that the review team is looking for. I think we also published a blog piece. Is it late at the beginning of
last week
on the definitions for the terminology that we use for security at ICANN, and it also looks at the historical creation of those the use of those terms in their historical perspective at ICANN and within the internet community. I believe that the review team has received a link to that blog piece.
Yes.
And hopefully you find that informative and helpful. We view that as one of the team's responses to answering one of the security review team recommendations that goes to recommendation 3. But we also view that as part of using all the tools that ICANN has available to explain what we do in security and how we are in a supportive role for the community. So as a clarifying question, the questions that we've received, have those been sent out to the rest of the review team?
No, they have not yet been submitted to the entire team, have they? Oh, you did. Oh, okay. Then, yes, they have.
Then in that case, I want to jump to one of the questions and kind of ask in response back. I've labeled this question number 3, but it's can ICANN provide a resource breakdown in terms of staff and money for SSR-related efforts categorized by the type of identifiers, such as by names, numbers, and protocol parameters? And so as an initial response to this question, I think we have to look at this carefully, because right now, from a finance perspective and a reporting perspective, I don't believe that we separate the work that is done in that manner. And so to do that, one, we need to look at the way that we're reporting and see if that's something that can be done, but also we need to have a conversation with the departments that may impact and see if they agree that is something that a type of reporting that should be done. So we can't make that determination on our own. I would want to go talk to the IANA team and also finance team and see if that type of reporting is something that is feasible and makes sense. But right now, that's not a way that we break down resource right now.
Okay. I mean, you're making a statement. I agree. I understand and I agree with that statement. I guess it'll fall on us as ATRT to determine whether or not a breakdown of that nature helps in accountability and transparency. And if you can answer the question yes, you can do the breakdown, then that, you know, sort of removes the need for us to determine whether or need we make the recommendation or not. So I accept your statement that you don't do that, you don't know that information currently, and that that's something that you'll be looking into.
So another one of the questions was some of the definitions used within the security framework come from discussions that are in large part the DNS security symposia that ICANN has co-hosted over the years. And so there was a question of who participated in those symposia, how were the attendees selected, is this an ongoing series of meetings, and if so, who organizes the meetings and what resources does ICANN contribute? So I am prepared to provide an initial answer to this one. The attendee list for those meetings is published as an appendix to the symposia reports. And the selection for the first two events, the one in Georgia Tech in, I believe it was 2009, and the event at Kyoto University in 2010, was by invitation, and there was a symposium committee that identified who to send invitations to. The symposium conducted in October of last year was done in partnership with the Anti-Phishing Working Group, and this was a open event. So if you could get to the APWG meeting in Puerto Rico, you were free and welcome to attend the SSR symposium. The symposia was organized as a way for the ICANN security team and other members of the team and staff to engage with the information security community more directly. The participation in this event has evolved over the years from invited members of the DNS community to include both DNS and information security community participants who have good grasps of technology operations, security, DNS abuse, misuse, and e-crime. And that it's one that has gone from being an invitation event to one that we publicly post that the event's occurring and invite interested parties to contact us for the participation information. The most recent event, APWG, in their publishing of their schedule of events, also provided information and ways for people that were interested to register. And so in that sense, these events are becoming more open, and we're looking at ways to make this a more open, inclusive opportunity for the community rather than it being restricted or limited.
Okay, so by that answer, I gather ICANN is the lead on the symposia, or is it more cooperative between APWG? Or
so we've become provided the hosting and the facilities, made arrangements with. So the first two events were with universities. Georgia Tech University, which had a and still has a significant computer science and security program. Kyoto University, also because of personal connections that we had to help to identify a good spot for community to get to this meeting. We've tried to make sure that the meeting rotates to an extent by region so that it's not held in one place at this in we've tried to diversify the location so that it's easier for the community to get to it. So financial support, collaboration support by working with other groups. Again, APWG, we're talking, our team is talking with them about hosting a similar event at their upcoming fall e-crime summit in San Francisco this year. So we're looking at, working with others, not solely doing an ICANN-only event. So there's another question of what efforts are being undertaken by ICANN to identify and mitigate particularly vulnerable sectors of the Internet's system of unique identifiers. such as operationally vulnerable ccTLDs, RPKI, signing protocol parameter registries, and a related question of how is that identification and mitigation done in an open, transparent, and accountable manner. So ICANN, through the security team, we conduct capability building efforts with the community. We provide training for ccTLDs so that they are operationally stable, resilient, and secure. And we only do this when invited by ccTLDs and the regional TLD organizations. So we make a point to be very clear that the training that is done at the request of and in partnership with these organizations. So an example, we have done in the last few months DNSSEC training in Lebanon, which was done in partnership with ISOC Lebanon and NSRC, the Network Startup Resource Center. We also did a training for Tunisia, the .tn ccTLD, in partnership with NSRC. And last, maybe 2 weeks ago, we did a DNSSEC training in partnership with .ng in Lagos, also at the EFICTA event in Lagos. And we have upcoming requests from LACTLD for a DNS training in Panama and from AFTLD for a DNS training in Madagascar. So this is a type of events that we do in collaboration with experts in the community, supporting the work to make sure that vulnerable sectors of the system of identifiers are supported and that we're providing that ICANN's expertise in a way that's accountable and open.
Hypothetically, a GTLD were to request the same training, would ICANN provide that at this, again, sort of to the openness, transparency, and accountability side of things? How would the cost of that be borne in relation to the work that you're currently doing with ccTLDs?
So far, we have not to date received a request from a GTLD for that type of work. But I would assume that we would look to the registry stakeholder group or appropriate group of perhaps in the new GTLD space, if there's a grouping of either the brand TLD group or some other group might request this of the staff, and that then we could say, look, we now have a request from this group, and then we could measure that against other requests that we've received from regional TLD organizations or other groups. I have to say other groups because we are increasingly requested by law enforcement entities for DNS training. We've done this training with Interpol and Europol and other... so the Interpol Underground Economy Conference. That's an event that's coming up later this year. We have a course it's called Finding Badness in the DNS, and this same material is presented to other groups. We're looking at taking this material and making it available through the e-learning tools that are being developed across ICANN so that other groups at large, for instance, might be able to see this material as well. That way all the material is public. And if other groups want to receive this information, that there's a vehicle for them to do so.
And how about RPAI or other resources that ICANN is, in theory, responsible for?
So we haven't received, for those functions being managed by the IANA and DNSOps groups, that's the part of the question that I'd want to take to them to see how would they appropriately. I can address the first part of the question about efforts to promote operational resiliency in the system, but for RPKI and for that one, I would want to take back to the IANA team and DNSOps. I will also add that ICANN is a participant in global incident response forums, such as the Forum for Incident Response Security Teams and other collaborative groups. We publish this in our annual framework, so we list the types of trainings that we do and the groups that we're working with, and hopefully that is visible and that this review team sees the work that we're doing in that area. So the next set of comments and questions were questions on specific recommendations, and I've been going through and making initial comments that I want to provide in detail to the review team, but at this stage I think it's at the early stage of how we would answer some of these. Question two, though, says, does staff feel the reviews are done with appropriate frequency? How is feedback solicited and consensus measured? So when I look at this, I think let's be really clear on what we mean by review, because there's the operational review in the big sense of reviewing the SOs, ACs, and the structures, and that type of review. And then there's what we've been doing in the annual frameworks has been including a status report of how the security team acted on the set of activities that were published in the previous year's SSR framework. And so if it's something, if the review team is looking for us to have something much more in-depth than the status report from the previous year, then that part of this implementation might need to be done differently.
Yeah, I was actually asking a question with respect to the response that had been provided by the SSR review team, I believe in the spreadsheet, where you had mentioned the reviews were annually. I don't recall the exact wording in the spreadsheet that you'd put in. I was looking for input from the SSR team whether they felt that was sufficient, the frequency was sufficient, or it should be done more frequently or less frequently.
So I know from the feedback that we received from the review team while they were developing their final report is that they acknowledged in the year that it took to get from draft report to the final report that the security team and ICANN had made progress on implementing some of the recommendations that we could see were coming from the review team, and that they could see that we were already addressing this in the way we've been changing the annual framework. And I think this is something that we would want to make sure it's continued, and so that the way that we were reviewing our progress evolves to a level that satisfies the review team, but also provides enough information for the community that they can see we're making progress on the things that we're supposed to. So to go a bit deeper into that, there's a second question of how is the feedback solicited and consensus measured? I believe I've made this point in conversations with the review team a couple times, but for our work, we published quite broadly the notice to the different stakeholder groups, advisory committees, that the FY14 framework was out for public comment, encourage them, stakeholder groups, SOCCs, and others to review and weigh in and provide feedback. We took the additional step this year of sending out personal invitations quite broadly to groups that actively participate in ICANN and also to groups that maybe should be aware of the work that's being done but might not be aware, and we thought this might be a way to increase public comment and participation on the framework. What we know is that it did increase the readership of the report, and behind the scenes that the different groups that were approached read the document, it did not necessarily translate into more public comments. A personal perspective is that the, how you can push the public comments on documents is something that I hope the review team looks closely at, because after sending so many personal requests, please read, we sent around 150 to different groups or organizations, and that didn't translate into public comments, but I know it translated into people read the document. That doesn't tell me if they read it and didn't care, or if they read it and they're pleased with what was in it. I know from, you know, not public feedback that they appreciated the outreach, but but in some cases, some of these groups who we have reached out to have now started to join groups. So some of them have become active in the NPOC, for example, that might not have been as aware of ICANN prior to that. And so I'm not claiming that we've increased the participation in a particular stakeholder group, but we have this has been a useful way to raise awareness of the security activities.
How many comments did you receive? This is Brian.
I believe we had 22 public comments. And what we did include is the quite active discussion from the CCNSO session in Beijing that was specifically on the framework and outreach. So there was quite a whole hour of the CCNSO meeting was about the security outreach that we do. And I think that was useful to add to the record because it was quite active discussion. To some of the other questions, we are now entering the phase where we're really working on the implementation of the recommendations, and we are identifying some of the recommendations will require community staff collaboration in order to be fully implemented. So we know that the recommendations that relate to the development of or the publication of best practices by stakeholder groups is one that we will be taking a request to the individual stakeholder groups to help us of which best practices they would want to publish for their stakeholder group membership. And on question 9 is worded as, can ICANN provide information on their evaluation of which certification they have chosen beyond SysTrust for DNSSEC KSK management and the rationale for that choice? So to me, this question assumes that ICANN will proceed with certification, and my understanding from the SSR review team is that they didn't include a requirement that ICANN become certified, only that it do an assessment of its certification options. And if certification is to be pursued, then that should be published as a roadmap. So I guess what we may be coming back for clarity on the wording of is a analysis of or an assessment of certification options and a publication of that meeting the language that's in the recommendation, or that's something that we will want to spend time talking about. But at least our interpretation of the wording is that it doesn't require ICANN to go be certified if that's not appropriate.
How long do you? Oh, David, please.
Yeah, I think as the author of that particular question, I believe I was reacting to the assertion of the SysTrust as the mechanism by which certification had been done, and I was interpreting that the SysTrust is, you know, very specific to the functionality that's being provided by DNSSEC and the DNSSEC key management stuff. It's not in any way a sort of a certification for the organization as a whole. So, I think if the interpretation of the recommendation is that, you know, that it wasn't a mandate to do a certification, then but it was instead a request to do an assessment, then, you know, coming out with that assessment, I think, would meet that recommendation. And then the question that I would ask is, you know, where is the security team in relation to doing that assessment?
So the other piece of that is that ICANN as an organization has been pursuing the EFQM for the IANA team, and that I believe that a decision's been made to expand that to across the whole organization, so that the EFQM approach would not just be solely for IANA, but could be applied broadly. And in order to do that, that would involve a assessment process, publication of processes. That there's quite a significant amount of work in order to meet that quality standard, and that the work that's done for that would go to meeting this recommendation 9. So further down, there's a question on recommendation 15. Can a pointer be provided to documents that list ICANN's actions as a facilitator in responsible disclosure, dissemination of DNS security threats and mitigation techniques? In March of this year, we published guidelines for coordinated disclosure. And I will provide a link to this document for the review team. This is a set of guidelines that the security team has developed and is being used for security researchers and others in the community to report vulnerabilities in ICANN systems, or it could be other systems. We think that this is one of the documents that goes toward meeting this recommendation. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
We just recently used it, too, with the disclosure.
So with the coordinated vulnerability disclosure strategy, ICANN can sort of operate in one of three ways. We can be receiving disclosure that affects ICANN. We can be acting as a coordinator with information that we found with other affected parties. Or we could be acting as a third party ourselves, being contacted by, say, a researcher that doesn't know who to communicate with in the DNS community, and we just act as a middleman and pass it off to the affected parties, or maybe take a more active coordination role. Being a fairly new process, we've just recently done that last model, where some researchers had found several vulnerabilities in certain DNS manufacturers' resolvers. They didn't know who to contact. We acted as the introducer. So we've now exercised it in 2 out of the 3 ways. And I guess that's good. There's not so many problems that we have to constantly exercise this thing. But now that we have it, it's been pretty convenient for people. And also that it's gotten reporting, we're finding more people are aware of it. So hopefully that'll lead for more involvement and better communication. Instead of people just calling whoever they happen to know, it'll put ICANN in a more central role, so we'll also get better situational awareness of what's going on out there that impacts the DNS ecosystem.
I guess in the context of openness transparency, is there an intent or a plan to report on the exercises of that coordinated process? And I'd understand if the answer there would be no, because some sensitivities.
Yeah, I think we ask the person who's disclosing, and we have a certain number of day limit in which we plan to go public. Even if it's not with the nitty-gritty details, it's either with abstracted numbers or how many times we've done it, or so it's on a case-by-case basis. But in our disclosure document, we mention that we will report. So, but we're not going to report if the vulnerability is not fixed. We're not going to tell the world the problem if it's still being resolved. Just that we're currently investigating something.
So the next recommendation question is, can a pointer be provided to documents that list ICANN's root zone monitoring, threat detection, and mitigation efforts? Is ICANN engaging in threat in detection and mitigation of threats outside the DNS? Can a pointer be provided to documentation describing ICANN's efforts in distributing threat and incident information? So ICANN participates in DNS OARC with other registries and operators, and we're quite public that we provide support for DNS OARC, and they publish information. But we also provide support to the RIPE NCC's Atlas project, and this allows for the the distribution of what they call Atlas nodes that provide real-time measurement on the DNS. We're using it in relation to LRoot. There's other root operators that do the same, and this information is public through the Atlas portal. I have a link to the page that shows the LRoot nodes, and I'm going to send that to the review team. We think this is quite fascinating information because now the number of probes being distributed globally is increasing, and you can really see by particular region where there's activity happening, and it allows one to use this in a way to see health of the DNS, at least from a root perspective. So we think this is an interesting tool, and it's something that we want to we'll in this fiscal year be looking at how to use this monitoring tool to provide some more visible metrics and information to the community.
This is a bit of a trick question, but are you monitoring any other routes than L?
So I can't answer that because I'm not in the DNS ops team, but we'll have to capture that question and take it to them to see. Is there something you're looking for?
So monitoring of the root system is a bit challenging given the structure of the root system and the independence of each of the root operators from... I mean, you can do it one of two ways. One, you can do it with the cooperation of all of them, or you can do it just by doing it because they are public resources and you can continue to monitor them. And if one of them happens to go offline, then they would be embarrassed by the fact that ICANN shows them as being non-operational. And from a transparency, openness, and accountability perspective, from ICANN's point of view, there's probably a right answer there. However, that may not sit well with some of the root operators.
Yeah, so I understand pretty well what you're asking about, and I'm not prepared to answer that. But we could talk to the DNS ops team and see if we can come back with a specific answer to the question. So there's a question on recommendation 3. Can a pointer be provided to the definitions that ICANN uses for terminology and descriptions? Can a schedule of training and materials be provided? So those are really two different things. But I mentioned at the beginning of my talk that we had just recently posted on the ICANN blog a description of the historical uses of the terminology. And so I will, as part of this, provide that link to this document. We are also updating our schedule of trainings so that this will be included in the My ICANN portal, and it'll be more visible for the community to see what events we have upcoming, partly so that different groups can see where we already may have conflicts by having our staff either providing training remotely, because we don't always go in person, hopefully that will help lessen the conflicts that occur around the limited number of dates for this activity. I can see from the requests that we are beginning to receive from the regions, we now have regional strategies from the Middle East, from Africa, Asia Pacific, and Latin America and the Caribbean. All of them have security, stability as one of their key pillars. Many of them are asking for training. This won't be something that we as ICANN Security will be able to provide alone to meet the demand that's out there. We will have to, and we really should be working in partnership with others who can do this and provide this. And so that's something that we'll want to make sure is, while we have some resources to help do this on our own, that we're not recreating the skills that could be done and delivered by others who may be more better placed in those regions. So there's a question on recommendation 14. Can a pointer be provided to documentation that details what outreach activities are done and how this has changed over time? We have included a description of activities in the fiscal 14 framework. I will say over time this has evolved as the interest in training has increased, so as I just mentioned with the regional strategies. But we also have an increase in requests of our group from the global stakeholder engagement team, where our group provides subject matter expertise when requested, not just to the community, but within ICANN staff to provide the either specific on-the-ground expertise of how DNSSEC can be deployed to providing that type of subject matter expertise on work that others are doing. We have also increased our engagement with organizations that are focused on privacy and data protection. As an example, we reached out to the Article 19 organization to review the fiscal year 14 framework, and we've also had participation at events such as the Computers Freedom and Privacy Conference in Washington, D.C. from a few weeks ago. We had someone attend the Freedom Online Conference in Tunis a few weeks ago as well. So that's not just security team, it's, you know, from the organization is broadening the types of groups that it reaches out to all of those who may have an interest in the internet ecosystem.
And did you get inputs from those representatives who went to Tunis, it was? Did they come back to you with inputs? Or was that in a separate silo of ICANN?
So that event happened after the security framework had already gone through a public comment process. I think what that type of event has done is opening up contacts and creating channels of communication for future discussion and for the future for them to be involved and aware of the type of work that we're doing. For the other questions, we're going to need to spend some time as a group and also internally, and then coming back with formal responses. But this was a quite detailed set of questions. And hopefully this type of engagement helps the review team see that we are taking this very seriously and want to provide the information that is asked of us. And we had previously provided a table, the Excel spreadsheet from a couple of months ago. And if there's other approaches to providing this information, we'd be open to that.
And go ahead, David.
Yeah, no, just wanted to thank you for providing the responses you have to date. I am aware that the questions were quite detailed. The sort of the follow-on questions were quite detailed, and they are particularly helpful to me as someone who's. Has some specific interest in the SSR-related stuff. I think It will definitely help that, and the additional answers that you're providing, the formal answers, will definitely help in establishing, what sort of input we provide in the ATRT review of the SSR stuff.
And just to give you some guidance in terms of our timeline, we are meeting in Los Angeles in the latter half of August, so roughly a month from now, and that's when we begin to put pen to paper. We're going to put out a draft report with proposed recommendations mid-October. So really the August to end of September is probably the last window to get fresh data in before we publish something, just so you have an idea of our arc of a timeline as you do the rest of your work. But thank you very much.
I mean, we're in the process of doing a pretty substantial update and improvement to the way that our team page is structured, and that the information that is made available is done in a way that is easy for people to find. It's accessible. It makes sense. It also provides a way to keep us current on how we're doing with implementing the 28 recommendations. And so I think you'll find that useful. I think hopefully the community will see that we're trying to make progress. The review team report was only adopted by the board in the Toronto meeting, and while I like to think that it wasn't that long ago, we're now approaching almost a year, so we need to start showing a faster pace of implementation for the recommendations.
And to that point about the website and organization, one of the things we're looking for is also your observations on the effect of implementations, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, as you've gone about the business of implementing these recommendations, what has been the effect? And if, you know, organization of the information in an easier-to-use place is an unintended or unasked-for effect, call that out. If there's something that was particularly difficult about the implementation, we want to know that too.
Yeah, I can already see that there's a sort of class of recommendations that is going to take longer to implement because we can't do them alone. And so for those, that's important for the review team to see that we have a set of work that we can't complete without that.
That's, in fact, very important. Please do call it out, because one of the discussions we're having at a meta level for future review teams is when recommendations are drafted, that they're done with some understanding of implementability. And so those points would be very helpful to inform not only this review team, but the next one.
And so that's one that, and you know, Denise can comment on this, but I know that the security review team had that in mind when they were trying to create recommendations that were practical and implementable, and we still see that there are some that are challenging, even as much as they tried to create some that really could be done that way.
Alan.
I'm going to say something that sounds like it's obvious, but it's not. Certainly from our point of view, we far prefer to be told we're not going to do it for a year, or it's not implementable, or we're struggling, than to be patted on the shoulder and told, don't worry, it's in progress. So, just for the record.
Yeah, and if I may, it's Denise Michelle. So the approach that the SSR team largely took was to not provide specific or prescriptive deadlines, but rather to offer the recommendations and then expecting staff to, once the board approved them, to take the time needed to investigate and develop a logical work plan and timeline, and then come back to the community, the board, with the proposed schedule for implementation. And so that approach has worked well. And even with that, there's been a few of the recommendations that, even with that, will take longer than I think initially anticipated. And that's largely because they involved community engagement and collaboration. And there's a certain fluidity and unpredictability to that, in part. And so we also need to have situations where we can revise the work plan, given those types of occurrences.
Yeah, I would say in organizing for the SSR recommendations, there's some that just some come before others. You look at them and you think, well, you have to do all this documentation or answer all these questions before you can answer the next set. So they naturally start to order. And then you also mentally say, well, these are the ones I control. I control the clock on these. These other ones are going to be externally clocked or legal and compliance or accounting or IT or whatever. And then you can see if all of a sudden it involves an outside community and three internal departments, that one's probably going to take the longest. And for that reason, we put online, Patrick built it's a spreadsheet, it's on the screen here, where we put our expected timeline. We expect it to have it done in, you know, two trimesters, three trimesters. Our deadline is, you know, 2 years from now. And then we've been blocking them off as they get done, so you sort of can visually see. And then if a deadline slips, it'll slip, and if it doesn't, it'll be marked off as done. And so for each trimester, we pick, say, four or five that we're going to try to get done that trimester. And if we get more done, great. And if we get less done, then...
It all sounds very rational to respond. One note there, if in building a plan for implementation, and certainly there should be some transparency around that unless there's a need to not have it, that if and when deadlines do slip, documenting that in a transparent way at each step so that it's visible to the community, the next review team. It's a simple step, but it's one that's sometimes easy to overlook. That's important too. Fiona?
Yeah, I just have a quick question. You talked about this timeline of implementation and planning. So when you guys do slip deadlines for whatever reason, do you then explain why? That's actually a great suggestion and tool for everyone else to do, I think, as well.
So the last update that we published was included in the Fiscal 14 framework, which was posted in March. I think we're due to provide an update of where we are in the recommendations and the tracking. So that's one that we'll add, that if something has slipped from what we projected, we'll call that out.
Terrific. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Jeff, Patrick, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. And looking forward, obviously, to a future engagement. So if you just work with David and signal when you're ready to do so, that would be great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other business time? Any other business time? Okay. Terrific. Okay, we're at the point of the agenda where we are any other business. We are going to have a Chatham House Rules session immediately following this to discuss confidential inputs that we've received. Any other business before we close for the day? Fiona?
I just have a question, and maybe you'll take this up tomorrow. So now that the group has sort of adopted these templates as sort of a framework to start drafting, is there going to be a deadline or a time frame for getting the A templates drafted, which is on the existing recommendations? It would be very useful to have early drafts of those for the meeting in August, and maybe we could establish a deadline, just a suggestion.
Excellent question. Item number 8 tomorrow, roadmap to Los Angeles in terms of our work. We'll discuss and fix that then. There'll be a fixed date. Thank you. Any other business? Okay. Thank you all. Review team members only, to remain in the room. If you could stop the recording, Alice, we'll have our closed session. And thank you, ICANN staff. Yes.